Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Time Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 197 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium bets for UFC on Fox 19 went 2-1 to profit 1.08 units overall. We won our bets on Raquel Pennington and Michael Graves, but lost our play on Beneil Dariush. We also won both of our free bets on the Eliza Zaleski dos Santos TKO prop and the under 2.5 rounds total in the Nurmagomedov-Horker fight. Back to the present, UFC 197 features an 11-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Ultimate Fighter winner Efraim Escudero, who is 25-10, and Kevin Lee, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Lee minus 400, the comeback on Escudero plus 280. At our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, right now it's Lee minus 420, the comeback on Escudero is plus 335. Now, interesting note here, early on the action was on Escudero, so he was receiving some dog action, which isn't really that surprising because normally you don't see Escudero close to a 300 dog. But now, since it's getting closer to fight time, we are seeing some action back on Lee. I'm sure a lot of parlays are involved as well, and his climb back up to 420, so Lee a solid favorite over Escudero in what should be actually a pretty good fight. I mean, Escudero is always in a great fight. He's always competitive, even against higher level of competition, which Lee obviously is in this spot. I mean, Escudero is going to be game. He's going to come to fight. He's a hard guy to stop, and he's going to make it interesting, especially if he hits a scorecard. So you know what you're getting with Escudero. He's a well-rounded fighter. He's improving. He's got a nice little confidence little run that he's on recently. I think he's at an all-time high with his confidence level. Of course, he's training with the MMA lab. A lot of good things, a lot of good momentum right now on Escudero's side. Now, for Lee, he had a lot of good momentum on his side until, unfortunately for him, he got finished in his last fight, which was a pretty big surprise because obviously he got finished by a grappler and he got TKO'd. So none of us were expecting that to happen and play out like that because Lee has showed so much promise, I mean, throughout his career. I know he had that crazy early fight in his career with Iaquinta. He started off well and then ended up losing that battle. But after that, he really started taking fights and getting better. I mean, every fight you've seen some flashes of brilliance from him, really. I mean, the guy, to talk about a well-rounded game, Lee has that as well. His striking's decent. He's powerful. He's effective. He's actually has some speed. He mixes things up well. But of course, it's his ground game. It's his wrestling that becomes a factor in most cases as well. So these guys are really a lot alike because they're both well-rounded fighters and they both like to use their wrestling and utilize their grappling games. But I think what you're going to see here, if that part gets neutralized a little bit, Lee is still the better wrestler. So I think if it does end up on the ground, he's going to get top position. I mean, that's one thing that's kind of hurt Escudero in the past. Against other stronger wrestlers, a lot of times he has ended up on his back. And of course, we all know these days in MMA, it is harder to finish, it seems, off your back because everybody's pretty much game and can neutralize people out. So I think Lee probably gets top position if it does hit the ground. On the feet, I give Lee the slight edge as well. He stays a little bit busier. He's got the speed advantage. But the caution here is that Lee is coming off of that knockout loss, so you got to be careful with it. We don't know where he's at mentally. But he should bounce back nicely here, and I do expect him to beat Escudero. It probably hits the scorecards, and I don't see Escudero outpointing Lee. So hopefully Lee gets back on track because there is a lot of potential, a lot of promise in Lee. I mean, he does have the skill to eventually make a title run. So I'm going to pick Lee to win this fight.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty competitive matchup. I mean, Escudero does have the experience on Lee, but Lee is definitely more of the up-and-coming prospect, and Lee has picked up some pretty quality wins already in his young UFC career now. Obviously, Lee's coming off a very disappointing performance against Leonardo Santos where, I mean, he was a big favorite in that fight, came out, looked good, and then just got caught on the chin and went down. It wasn't even from that hard of a punch. So there's going to be a lot of questions about him moving forward about, you know, his chin, how he can handle strikes. Thankfully, Efren Escudero isn't exactly known as a power puncher. He does have a little bit of pop in his hands, but Lee is a quick guy, has good footwork. I don't expect Escudero to find a home for either of his hands very often in this fight. Escudero's biggest threat in this fight is probably going to be just aggression, maybe a little bit of wrestling. But again, Lee is a pretty good wrestler too, so I really do think that Lee has all the advantages here except maybe just chin strength and experience. Maybe he makes a rookie mistake and gets caught in a guillotine or something on a takedown attempt. Maybe he lets Escudero control the fight a little bit by pressing him into the fence or getting top position. But for the most part, I just think Kevin Lee is the more talented, the more athletic, the quicker, younger, better fighter right now. So as long as Lee doesn't get caught in the chin and put out or get caught with a submission, I think he can either win a decision or maybe even pull off a late finish here against Escudero. So I still believe in Kevin Lee. He's just got to protect that chin a little bit. So my pick is going to be Kevin Lee. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Marcus Rogério de Lima, who is 13-4-1, taking on Clint Hester, who is 11-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened De Lima -125, the comeback on Hester -115. Right now, over at 5 times, it is De Lima -135, the comeback on Hester is +115. So I opened it virtually a pick'em with a very slight lean towards De Lima, and it's staying that way with De Lima obviously being a slight favorite still, -135. This is a tough fight. I mean, it's a hard one to call, hard one to pick, hard one to bet because of the factors you have here. You got two guys that like to stand and bang. You got two guys that are powerful enough to knock most people out in their weight classes. Of course, this is a fight where Hester is moving up to 205. He's coming off back-to-back losses. And there were two Miranda and Whitaker, so two excellent strikers that will actually outstrike most people at middleweight. So you can understand that. But at the same time, now he's moving up and facing a big, strong guy in De Lima who hits very hard, and that's how he wins fights as well. So there is a little bit of a concern since Hester is coming off back-to-back losses like he did. But at the same time, he's really not going to be outsized here. I mean, Hester, surprisingly, for moving up in weight class, he's not, I mean, he's going to be just as tall. He's going to actually have maybe 2 inches of pure reach in this spot. So it is a head scratcher. I mean, it's a hard fight to call because I think the way that these guys play out, they're going to want to stand and bang. I mean, both of them have a little bit of wrestling. Both of them have a little bit of jiu-jitsu as well, but typically they don't want to go that route. They want to stand and bang and knock their opponent out. Now, I think if anybody tries to wrestle in this spot, I think it probably will be Hester, and he could have some success against De Lima. And unfortunately, I mean, Hester's ground game is getting better. His jiu-jitsu is getting better. His sub-defense is getting better. If he had a little bit more of offensive ground game, I think he could really give De Lima some fits on the ground as well, but I don't think that's the case here. So with everything being said and the way these guys match up, it's probably going to end up playing out on the feet. And if that's the case, I do favor De Lima a little bit, and mainly because Hester is coming off back-to-back losses like he did. So I'm expecting somewhat of a slugfest, and if that's the case, I got to favor De Lima because he's just a little bit, I think, ahead of Hester right now with the striking. Even though he's maybe not as technical at times, I think he's still powerful enough that he could give Hester a lot of problems. And again, there is a concern with Hester coming off the losses like he did. So my pick is De Lima, but not a confident pick at all. And depending on the weigh-ins, I mean, I'll feel it out. You know, from time to time, I like to switch my pick, and this could definitely be one of those fights. That's how much I'm on the fence with this fight. I could definitely switch over to Hester. So not confident at all. It should be a good fight. Should be a fun fight. So I'm looking forward to watching it. But my official pick as of now is De Lima.
De Lima is just a big, strong, powerful Brazilian. And Hester is moving up from the middleweight class. And despite him moving up a weight class, and that's a big 20-pound weight difference, he's actually going to have about an inch in height and maybe an inch or two in reach as well, which is a bit surprising. Hester has not fought since his back-to-back TKO losses. Granted, they were to some pretty stellar competition with good strikers in Vitor Miranda and Robert Whitaker, probably both better strikers overall than Marcus Rogério de Lima. But de Lima does have the advantage in the fact that he is bigger. He does hit just as hard as those guys, if not harder. So, I mean, if Hester gets caught on the chin, he's still going to go down. There are some questions about his chin at this point. Hester is a good athlete with a pretty good boxing overall, and he might be able to mix in some wrestling. That could be a concern in this fight because De Lima did show in his last fight, a fight that he was heavily favored against Krylov, that he did not look good once in a bad position on the ground, just gave up his back, and Krylov was able to choke him out. It was just, he looked very poor in a defensive position on the canvas. So if Hester kind of is the aggressor in this fight, I can see him forcing De Lima to make mistakes. And on the feet, Hester might be the quicker fighter, although he's not going to be the more powerful guy. And I don't think his chin is going to be as strong as De Lima's. So if they're trading blow for blow, it's probably Hester that goes down. So if Hester mixes it up a little bit better, then he might have a better shot here. And he's also going to have to watch out for De Lima's offensive submissions, because De Lima has a pretty nasty guillotine choke, and he actually is a pretty talented Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist overall, but he's more of an offensive guy. So whoever's really able to dictate the pace and kind of force the action is probably going to be the one that walks out the winner. I really think this fight could go either way, but I'm going to side with Nick. I think De Lima probably pulls it off. Now, closing out the fight past prelims is a heavyweight contest between Walt Harris, who is 7-4, and UFC newcomer Cody East, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open East -210, the comeback on Harris +160. Right now, over 5 dimes, there has been some dog action coming in. Harris is down to +135, so East is down to -155. A lot of people believe in Harris. I mean, obviously, he's got the power. He's got the athleticism. He's honestly should be more capable and better than his current record indicates. It's just kind of a shame that he didn't have that much success in his first UFC run. Harris, I'm referring to, obviously, because he does have that explosiveness, that power, a lot of things that you want to see in the heavyweight division. And the heavyweight division is kind of wide open outside of the top tier of guys. So Harris could realistically make a run, and it could start here against East, because East is one of these guys that's coming in with a lot of hype. On the regional circuit, he's done very well. He has a lot of skill, a lot of talent. And again, he's more known for his knockout power as well. So this is a great fight. I mean, we're going to have two guys that like to stand and bang, and we'll probably see a lot of that as well. And both of them have a knockout power that one mistake could definitely end it either way. So I can understand the dog action coming in early on Harris, but I don't trust him as much. Honestly, I trust East a little bit more. East has a little bit better cardio. I think he has a little bit better of a ground game as well. So he's just more of the complete fighter. Harris tends to fade as the fight goes on. He's more of a front runner. He'll come out early. He'll be aggressive early. He can obviously end a lot of fights early on. But as the fight goes, I think it definitely favors East a little bit. Now, I'm not saying that East can't end things early in round one either here. I expect actually one of them to make a mistake in this fight to probably end in that spot. But if it does go on a little bit, I do favor East is what I'm basically trying to say. So, I mean, a lot of hype around him. And rightfully so. East has had a little bit of a bad spot. I mean, early on in his career on the regional scene, his loss, his lone loss was actually to Tony Lopez. I mean, that was all the way back, I believe, in 2012. So a few years back, and that was later in the fight as well. I mean, that's just a kind of a bad spot, because if you expect all the hype and everybody, the way they talk about East, you wouldn't expect him to have a loss like Tony Lopez on his record. So that is a little bit of a head scratcher there as well. And Harris has enough power that that hype can disappear quickly from East of Harris land. So with all that being said, though, I still think that the action coming in on Harris, I understand it. I realize I respect it, but at the same time, I'm going the other way. And I think that East is the prospect right now, and East has the brighter future in the UFC as well. If he gets by Harris in this win, he definitely will have momentum on his side, and there might be some good things to see with Cody East. So I'm going to lean against the public and go against the grain a little bit. And I'm going to pick Cody East to win, probably win by knockout, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if he wins on the ground either.
Both of these fighters are pretty athletic and powerful strikers. The difference is, I think Cody East just has that confidence. I mean, Walt Harris is now 0-3 in his three UFC fights, and none of them are to really good heavyweights. I mean, Jared Roschel, not even in the UFC anymore. Take it however you want to say about that. But Nikita Krylov, he's not even a heavyweight anymore. And then Soa Palelei's retired. So none of those guys are guys that Harris should have been super concerned about, and he ended up losing to all three, two of them by stoppage. So I think Harris, he's a bit of a front runner. If he does not get going early, he's just going to wilt. And I don't know if he'll be able to get going early, because Cody East can take a lot of punishment. I mean, that guy has a granite chin, and if he's trading blow for blow with Walt Harris, it's definitely Walt Harris that's going down. Now, Harris is imposing, but I think East is just as quick and able to get in and out on the feet. He's actually got a decent wrestling background as well, at least on the the high school amateur level. So if he wants to get to the floor, I think East would definitely have the better opportunity to do it. And East does mix things up a little bit better than Harris. Harris is more of a, you know, just a big, powerful puncher. And East can mix it up with some knees, with kicks from distance. Now, one thing about East is he does kind of have a shady background. He's had been in some trouble with the law in the past. And there was a lot of people that thought that it was going to prevent him from getting signed to the UFC at all. And that's definitely going to be under the magnifying glass as we get closer to this fight. I don't know if that's going to get to him at all mentally, especially as he's getting ready for his UFC debut. But if it doesn't, then East should have the talent here to go in there and take care of business, because if Walt Harris does not get a quick win, I don't really see how he wins. So I think Cody East can put Walt Harris away early. He could put Walt Harris away midway of the fight. He could win a decision. He could put him away late. Walt Harris can only finish this fight early, and I think Cody East's chin can weather the early storm from Harris. So I'm going to side with Cody East. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a lightweight contest between Glyco Franca, who is 14-3, and James Vick, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Vick minus 300, the comeback on Franca plus 220, and there has been some dog action coming in on Franca. Right now, the line is down to minus 175 for Vick. The comeback on Franca is plus 155, so a lot of people believing in the Ultimate Fighter winner in Franca. And you know what? He's not a bad fighter, so I do understand that as well, the early action. I opened it a tad high. There are reports, though. A lot of people, I guess, supposedly, they told me earlier, are coming in on Vick inside the distance, so it's kind of contradicting a little bit, because most of the straight bets are coming in for Franca at the dog price, and then all the prop bets are, a lot of people are taking Vick inside the distance. So a little bit of balance action there, and I'm sure we're going to see some action continue to kind of creep in, especially with parlays or whatnot, on Vick as well. So this is an interesting spot to bet. This is an interesting fight, because Franca is a pretty well-rounded fighter. Now, he's aggressive at times, so that does make him a little wild at times as well, but he has knockout power in the feet. He's got a little bit of wrestling. He's got submission skill as well. So this guy has some skill, and he's only 25 years old. He's going to get better. So if he just concentrates a little bit more on the technical end of it, works on his cardio a little bit, I mean, he has the skill and the finishing ability to be a threat at 155. So we got to watch out for Franca, and you got to respect him. And especially with Vick, I mean, he's shown some tremendous skill. Obviously, Vick has that kind of length that usually bothers people, which I should mention in this fight, actually, against Franca, he's not going to have that big reach advantage he's used to at 155. Franca's a pretty long fighter as well. So that makes a little bit of interesting case against Vick as well here. But overall, I mean, Vick, it has talent. I mean, the guy has wrestling skill. The guy has striking skill. He's got that length that I just mentioned. He's got a sick guillotine choke. I mean, he gets around your neck, it's hard to stop him, honestly. So Vick has skill everywhere. He's a finisher. He can win on the cards as well. He's one of these prospects that continues to improve. And there's been a lot of hype around Vick since the Ultimate Fighter show. I mean, there's a lot of people expecting this guy to, again, kind of make a serious run towards a title at one point or another. So he cannot suffer a setback in a defeat to Franca here. That would definitely be bad for his career. But it is possible, because one flaw that Vick does have is he gets tagged. He gets hit. He gets hit frequently. He gets hit to the point where he gets wobbled, and you just can't trust it. I mean, I think there is somebody that's going to clean Vick's clock soon, because the way his defense is, he's going to get hit. He's going to get put out. He's not going to survive it. It could be Franca. He's got enough power that I could see that happening in this fight. So not necessarily all that confident in Vick here, especially if he gets in another firefight. I mean, how many of those can he really take in all the punishment? But that being said, I guess you got to give him credit, because Vick officially hasn't been knocked out in the UFC thus far. So, hey, Vick, it is his fight to win or lose, I think, in this spot. And I think he can probably finish Frank along the way, because he has that kind of special finishing ability too. So if it basically comes down to it, if Vick doesn't get clipped, doesn't get knocked out, I don't think he gets submitted, and I think he can win on the scorecards, or he can finish Franca. So I am picking Vick to win this fight. I understand, though, that all the early dog action as well that's coming in on Franca, but I still think that Vick is the better fighter, and I think he's going to probably come through in this spot.
I think this is going to be a little bit more competitive fight than some people realize, but that being said, it's still Vick's fight to lose, because he is just he's the kind of guy that just finds ways to win multiple times. I mean, he's been in there against guys that we thought were better strikers, that we thought were better wrestlers, and he either somehow outstrikes them or makes good adjustments in fights, or submits his opponent. I mean, it's time and time again. You look at the Nick Hine fight. I mean, that kid came out and took it to Vic early, and then Vic was able to find his distance and kept Hine at bay for the next two rounds. A great prospect like Jake Matthews, and Vic catches him with the guillotine on a takedown attempt. So, you know, he finds ways to win. Franca does not have the UFC experience that Vic has, although Vic has not fought that often. I mean, he's taken a long time between most of his fights due to injuries and just long layoffs. So I think what we're going to see here, though, is Frank is going to be aggressive. He's actually one of the few fighters in the lightweight division that can kind of hold his own in terms of height and reach, especially reach, with Vic. Vic will be a couple inches taller, but Franca actually has just as long of arms. So I think if Franca can keep this in boxing range and really press Vic, he could, you know, definitely crack that chin. Vic is hittable, as Nick mentioned. And on the ground, I think Franca's wrestling and top control might be better than Vic's, but that is playing with fire, because Vic has a very active guard. He uses those long limbs well, and you got to watch out for that killer guillotine choke that he has finished multiple fighters already with in the UFC. So I think Frank is going to be dangerous. He's going to push Vic, but I don't think he can break Vic. So I think at some point either Vic could pick up a finish, or I could also just see him walking away with a decision. But I do think that he gets pushed here. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Carla Esparza, who is 11-3, taking on Juliana Lima, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Esparza -305, the comeback on Lima +225, and right now it is actually Esparza -185, the comeback on Lima +160. So a lot of similarities in line movement to the fight we were just talking about with Vic and everybody coming in on Franca early on in that fight, or everybody early on in this fight is coming in on Lima. I know Esparza's been out. She is a late replacement on this fight as well. Had enough time to probably prepare kind of properly for her. Nobody likes to take a fight on short notice, regardless how much time you have. But still, I think that the time window and everything considering isn't going to be that bad for Esparza. Although her layoff, she's been out since her title fight loss to Jacek was back in March of 2015. So been out over a year for Esparza, which you never like to see that. And, you know, she's had some injuries or whatnot as well. Now, confidence wise, we're not sure where her head is, because that was a beating she took to the champion. And of course, she has a skill level to become champion, or she was champion in the past. So you got to give Esparza that kind of credit. She's no easy out for sure. Obviously, her game is based off of her wrestling. I mean, she's an outstanding wrestler, great grappler. She's able to finish fights by submission. She's proven that time and time again as well. She's able to control the tempo of the fight, get people on the ground, and just kind of lay and pray if she wants to, drop some ground and pound. So Esparza is a very difficult out. And on top of it, she's working on her stand-up game, and it is getting better. Her boxing is definitely improving. Now, against a great striker, obviously, that has good takedown defense, like the current champion, Jacek, she's going to have her problems. But Lima is not quite that type of fighter. Lima has a lot of similarities to Esparza, honestly. She likes to take the fight to the ground. She likes to smother people, likes to ground them out a little bit. Has a little bit of power on the feet, so she is a little bit of a threat there as well. But the style and the way she likes to fight is, again, like Esparza. She likes to get people to the ground and kind of control them and do her thing on the ground as well. So this is going to be interesting to see who controls the wrestling battle here. And if it doesn't, if they neutralize each other out, who's actually going to have the bigger edge on the feet, which I could see both girls actually having success throughout the fight. I mean, I think Lima has more pure knockout power, but Esparza's probably got a little bit of speed over Lima as well. So that should benefit her. So I think we will see a pretty competitive fight. I do think that Esparza, as far as wrestling goes, is going to have the advantage, though. I mean, if you look at one of Lima's losses, Invicta I'm talking to, before she actually lost to the champion in the UFC, she lost. She got put on her back a little bit. She got controlled on the ground a little bit as well. And Esparza is definitely one of the best at doing that. So I know Lima's improved since that fight in Invicta that I'm referring to. But at the same time, that weakness or that spot is still there. And Esparza, I guarantee she's going to game plan appropriately. She's going to come in, look for those takedowns, and try to exploit that weakness, if it is a weakness still in Lima's game. I know Lima's been working hard, and she's gotten better. So it might not be as evident in this fight with Esparza. But that being said, I still got to go with Esparza. I just think she's a little bit ahead of Lima right now as far as the grappling game goes. And even it'll be a competitive fight either way, but still I side with Esparza. So I am going to go against the public action coming in early, and I'm going to pick Esparza to win the fight.
Lima has definitely looked good in her UFC run so far. I mean, her only loss was her UFC debut against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who's now the champ. And that was a competitive fight against Jędrzejczyk. She actually took her down a couple times and won a round against her. So I think Lima definitely has risen to the occasion since she came to the octagon. But Carla Esparza is a different type of animal. Lima usually is in a position where she's facing a striker or a BJJ artist or somebody that she will have the big wrestling advantage against, and she will be able to get on their back and have a top control advantage. And I don't think that's going to happen this time. Esparza is probably the best wrestler in the women's strawweight division, and Lima has had issues against fighters that actually tried to take her down. You saw it in her Invicta fight against Katia Konkanpa, the former Invicta champ. And Lima was put on her back repeatedly. It actually made me think that she wasn't going to be a very good UFC fighter at all. But she has turned my opinion a little bit. But again, I think if Esparza is aggressive with takedowns, then Lima could definitely have some big trouble here. The main issue with Esparza is the fact that she's been out a long time. This is her first fight since losing the title. And she is coming off of an injury. She is taking this fight on short notice, not super short notice, but she is replacing Jessica Aguilar, but it is a short notice fight. So, and she's coming off an injury and a long layoff. So those are the big question marks with Esparza. And on the feet, Esparza's really not that great. Obviously, Jędrzejczyk just lit her up on the feet. Esparza is a little bit better of a striker than she showed in that fight. That's just more how great Joanna is. But Lima probably should have a slight striking advantage in this fight. I would not be shocked by that. But I do think Esparza has more power. And Esparza, even though Lima focuses on wrestling a lot in her fights and gets a lot of takedowns, Esparza will have the wrestling edge, and that's where I draw the line here. So I think Esparza's takedowns will come into play, and she will be able to get them. So I'm going to pick Carla Esparza to pick up the win, but if Esparza comes in rusty, Lima could definitely pull off the upset. But for now, I'm picking Carla Esparza. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Danny Roberts, who is 12-1, taking on Dominique Steele, who is 14-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA Oddsbreakers perspective on this one?
I open Roberts -315, the comeback on Steele +235. Right now, at the time of the recording, it is Roberts -370. The comeback on Steele is +310. So more action coming in Roberts' way. He's definitely the more popular fighter overall, the more hyped fighter, of course, as well. There's been a lot of expectations that come with Roberts since he's made his UFC debut. And man, has he performed really well. I mean, even in his last fight against Coy, or I really should say his only fight in the UFC thus far, against Coy, man, he looks tremendous. Nathan Coy is definitely a talented fighter, an underrated fighter, to be honest with you. And Roberts was able to finish him early in that fight as well. So that was a nasty choke that he caught him with. And I believe that, I mean, Roberts is that type of fighter. I mean, you look throughout his career, it wasn't a fluke. I mean, the guy knows how to finish fights. It doesn't matter if he's losing the fight. Roberts is one of these guys on the feet. He's got nasty power. He's got finishing skill. He can knock you out on the ground. His wrestling needs some work. He can get put on his back, but even on his back, he finds a way to finish the fight. And if he doesn't, he can get back up a lot of times and keep things on the feet as well. So it's funny because he does start off at times slow. He gets put on his back. If you look at his fight, even before the UFC, the Jim Wallhead fight is a perfect example of that. Another solid fighter in Wallhead, and Roberts was losing early on. He managed to get back up and ended up, finishing Wallhead, which is a hard guy to finish as well. So this guy is a pure finisher. The guy has a ton of talent, a ton of hype, and a lot of people want to see this guy fight because they want to see him finish fighters. Now, Steele is a guy that he can definitely finish. Steele is a very underrated fighter in a lot of ways. I respect the guy. I think he's definitely talented and deserves a shot in the UFC. But at the same time, there's question marks. The guy's been knocked out 4 times throughout his career. Now he's fighting a true finisher. So this is not really a good fight for Steele when it comes to that sort of thing. Now, what he typically does, or what he wants to do, and especially in a fight like this, Steele wants to get the fight to the ground. He has good wrestling. He's able to control the fight. He's able to kind of grind people out. Obviously, I mean, you could say a lot of that throughout Steele's fights. That's how he's won his fights. He does have a little bit of knockout power as well. He's got some submission skill, but his main way of winning this fight is definitely not to play games with Roberts on the feet. probably stick him on his back and just be smart enough not to get subbed, which I think Steele might be able to do as far as not actually getting caught on the ground, because he's got BJJ and he's, I think he can neutralize him, Roberts out on the ground effectively enough that he doesn't get caught. I mean, he's definitely one of those fighters that I think defensively is sound enough that he can avoid getting caught on the ground. So really for Steele, I'm more concerned about him getting knocked out when the fight does stay standing. And I think that's probably what happens. I don't trust his chin. That's why the line's so high as well. I mean, you're getting a finisher fighting again against a guy that has been finished several times throughout his career. So Roberts should win this fight and he should win it by finish. If he doesn't, if it hits the scorecards though, man, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Obviously, it does favor Steele a little bit because I think that Steele can get enough takedowns or make this fight slower and he can steal one. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think Roberts is going to catch him within three rounds and put him out. So my pick is going to be Roberts.
Yeah, this fight will boil down to whether or not Dominique Steele is going to be able to get takedowns and avoid submissions, because on the feet, Roberts is going to obliterate Dominique Steele. He is just not going to be able to hang with him. He is not a good enough striker. He kind of wings his punches, and Roberts is a composed technical striker with big-time power. On the ground, Steele is a good wrestler. He definitely is. He can grind fights out. He can slam his opponent into a TKO like his last fight. And he can just go out there and wear his opponents down and win decisions, maybe ground-and-pound TKOs. Danny Roberts, on the other hand, while he's going to light Steele up on the feet, his wrestling, defense, and takedown ability to stop takedowns is definitely an issue. You saw that in his UFC debut. I mean, Nathan Coy just plowed him to the ground, but Roberts was quick on his feet, locked in a triangle choke, and got the submission. So Steele is going to have to be very careful about not leaving his neck exposed, about his hand positioning, about not giving Roberts a lot of space if he does get takedowns, because Roberts is going to be very active off of his back. He has a good submission repertoire, so I expect this fight to be either Roberts crushing Steele on the feet, potentially Roberts getting a submission on the ground, or Dominique Steele just grinding this one out. The problem with Steele grinding this out is you're going to start in the feet at some point, and you're going to be giving Danny Roberts opportunities to get takedowns or to knock you out. And every fight does start standing. So I'm going to lean Danny Roberts, but Dominique Steele is potentially a live dog if you're a believer in the wrestling. But my pick is going to be Danny Roberts here. Now, closing out the preliminary card, we have Sergio Pettis, who is 13-2, taking on Chris Kaleidis, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Pettis -260 to come back on Kaleidis +180 right now. Over five times, it's -240 for Pettis, and Kaleidis is +200. So line margins tightened up a little bit. There is two-way action coming in on this fight as well. Line seems to be fair, and I do believe so, because Kaleidis is one of these guys that has been nothing but impressive. I mean, he's really brought into the UFC to lose, in a way, I hate to say it that way, but to lose some fights, and he's overcome, and he's performed really well. I mean, the guy is, his stylistically, he's more of a grappling based fighter. He's a good wrestler. He's more than capable of finishing fights on the ground with his submission skills while grinding people out, outpointing people. He had a huge win in his last fight against Beal. That was, I think, a confidence booster for him. A lot of people were really highly regarded Chris Beal. So getting a win over a guy like that. And of course, in between losses, he ended up losing to Borg. But before that, he actually beat Patty Holohan as well by decision. And that was his UFC debut, which he took on short notice. So that's the kind of talent Kaleidis is. I mean, he's hanging with some of the big boys at 125. And Pettis is another one that he's going to have to fight here. Now, stylistically, this really isn't a great fight for Kaleidis, though, because Pettis has shown pretty good takedown defense overall throughout his career. And then, of course, Pettis is a threat everywhere the fight takes place. He's a threat on the ground, which I don't think he subs Kaleidis. I think Kaleidis' sub-defense is good enough that Pettis probably doesn't catch him. On the feet, though, I think Pettis can definitely do some damage. I mean, he's a little sniper, just like his brother. He's quick. He's got speed. He's got accuracy. He's got power. He's a fun fighter to watch on the feet for sure. The problem with Pettis is that chin. That chin has let him down. He's been rocked. He's been stopped. He's been finished. He's been knocked out once, and he's been subbed. But that submission also came from him getting rocked. So, and it's unfortunate, because if you look at Pettis, he would be undefeated right now at flyweight and probably in line for a title shot. But he had come from behind victories. His opponents did, actually. He was winning the fight against Caceres before he lost by submission. And again, he was actually winning the fight against Benoit before he got finished there, got caught there as well by KO. So Pettis would be undefeated. He's had great performances throughout. He continues to get better in all aspects of the game. And he's a fun fighter to watch, a big upside for him. I just wish that chin would hold up a little bit better for him. Now, fortunately for him, Kalaitis isn't really known for his huge knockout power, so I don't think he really has to worry about it as much in this fight, even though Kalaitis maybe is a tad bit underrated in the striking department, and who knows? I mean, Pettis' chin concerns you enough that even if Kalaitis lands, maybe he could put him out. I don't think that happens here in this spot, but just playing devil's advocate a little bit. I mean, that's the concern you got to have with Pettis. But overall, Kalaitis isn't really that kind of a threat to Pettis. I think this fight is really a point fighting match for Pettis. He could probably sprawl and brawl, maybe in some transitions end up on top on the ground as well. So I do think that Pettis comes through with a win here. I think Kalaitis is going to be game. He's going to be very tough for Pettis to handle. I mean, across the board throughout the fight, I don't think this fight finishes inside. I think we do probably see it hitting the scorecards. And on those scorecards, I think we have Pettis by decision. And if he could get a little run going here, I think Pettis will eventually get a shot at 125 at the title. So I'm kind of looking forward to that because in a way, it's unfortunate that he has been winning those fights. And then again, it's just kind of getting beat at the last minute in the times that he did. So like to see the upside of Pettis, like to see that chin hold up and like to see him go on a run. So I am going to pick Pettis to beat Kalaitis in this fight.
This one's a little bit similar to Kevin Lee against Efrain Escudero. Sergio Pettis has taken the Kevin Lee position and Kalaitis has taken the Escudero position, although Kalaitis isn't as experienced as Escudero, but Pettis is definitely a bright prospect, has all the tools possible to make a run, but he doesn't have a good chin. I mean, we've seen it multiple times now where he just gets caught and that either sets up a finish or he can get knocked out. Now, Kalaitis, to Pettis' advantage, does not have much power. He's not much of a striker overall. Pretty basic, rudimentary on the feet. Kalaitis is most dangerous when he gets takedowns, when he can get top position, as you saw in his UFC debut against Paddy Houlihan. Now, Sergio Pettis is actually a very good wrestler in his own right, very quick, very athletic, and has a sharp ground game, especially when he's on offense. So I think Kalaitis is probably going to get himself in a little bit of trouble if he's just mindlessly pursuing the takedown. Pettis should be able to fend him off, and I think Pettis can definitely pick him apart on the feet. Maybe he's a little gun-shy about that because he could just be worried about eating that Hail Mary type of bomb, but again, Kalaitis just does not have much power. I'm not particularly worried about it. I think Sergio Pettis should be able to outpoint Kalaitis. He might even be able to finish him, but it's unlikely because Kalaitis is pretty tough. If there's a finish, it might be by submission. Maybe Kalaitis over pursues a takedown, leaves his neck out, gets guillotined, or maybe gets triangle choked from if Sergio's on bottom. But for the most part, I just see Sergio controlling this fight. This fight feels picture perfect for him. A great opponent that is not going to threaten a big knockout. So I'm going to pick Sergio Pettis to pick up the win. Now, kicking off the main card on pay-per-view, we have a featherweight contest between Yair Rodriguez, who is 7-1, and Andre Feely, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Rodriguez -155, the comeback on Feely +115. Right now it is Rodriguez -155, Feely is +135. A lot of two-way support coming in here. A little bit more on Rodriguez still, and the line's kind of staying steady. And a lot of people, from what I see, are picking Rodriguez to win this fight, and fairly easy as well. I think this is going to be a battle. I think this is going to be Rodriguez's toughest fight to date inside the UFC. Because Feely, I know he's had his moments, he's had his bad spots for sure throughout. But at the same time, you see a lot of potential for Feely. And I think stylistically how these guys match up, it's an interesting fight, to say the least, for Rodriguez. And I've been on Rodriguez's bandwagon since the Ultimate Fighter as well. I think that he's definitely a talented guy. He's pretty good everywhere. I mean, he's got that long frame. Now, that being said, he's not going to have a reach advantage. He does usually, over most people, 145. He's got a little bit of a reach advantage, it seems. He's just a long, lanky type of fighter. Against Feely, he's not. Feely's going to have like a 3-inch reach advantage overall. But what I'm saying is Rodriguez has skill. He's got some length on him. He's usually got the reach over his opponents. He's got that unorthodox striking skill that works really well for him with his overall style of striking. I mean, he utilizes great angles, accuracy, footwork, throws crazy kicks at times as well. Just effective. I mean, you just don't know where the strikes are coming from Rodriguez, which obviously is hard to defend against. So he can be very effective on the ground. He's got those long limbs where obviously he can work that guard fairly well and submit people by triangle, by armbar. So he could give fighters fits on the ground as well. So Rodriguez is a very talented guy. He's been working on his wrestling. He can be effective with that. I understand it. I just think that Feely matches up extremely well with him. On the feet, I think Feely has more pure knockout power. I believe he's got better pure boxing skill as well. And I believe that Feely actually has a better wrestling here. So he's got to be cautious. I think Feely's going to be able to get the takedowns. He's going to push the pace on the feet a little bit. He's going to be in Rodriguez's face. Rodriguez is going to have to use his angles like he does and try to pick Feely apart, which is possible. But I still think Feely's going to eventually work his boxing enough and kind of get Rodriguez to the ground. And once he does, I think if he can avoid not getting caught by a choke or something like that Pepe caught him with. I mean, Pepe is a different animal off his back as well at times. I mean, he's pretty slick with what he does. So Rodriguez, is possible he replicates something like that? But I don't think he will. I think Feely's obviously been working on his defense, his ground defense, especially from guard after a guy beats like that, like he did to Pepe. So I'm expecting him a little bit more aware on the ground this time. And if Rodriguez really doesn't finish him, I think Feely's going to win on the scorecards or possibly finish Rodriguez late. One thing that people, I guess, aren't talking about that much is Rodriguez fights hard, and he fights hard for three rounds, but by the end of it, he does tend to fade a little bit. Both these guys tend to fade, because you can say the same thing a little bit about Feely, but for me, it's more noticeable with Rodriguez right now. Feely seems to have addressed that a little bit, and I think that's going to be a good thing for him in this fight, because I think Rodriguez will slow down as the fight goes. So I could realistically see Rodriguez maybe winning early on and being the front runner in this fight, stealing round one, but round two and round three having a little bit more problems with Feely, and Feely kind of taking over, maybe even finishing late. So I am going to go against the public overall here. Against opinion seems to be on Rodriguez. I think Feely, this is a good fight for Feely to win. So I'm going to pick Feely to win this fight and pull off the upset, either by late finish or on the scorecards.
Now, if Feely wins this fight, it will be late, I think, but Yair Rodriguez has a tendency to just come out aggressive and win the first two rounds, and then doesn't matter what happens in the third round as long as he survives. And I think that's probably what's going to happen here. Rodriguez is just a very aggressive, very dynamic striker. He should have the edge against Feely on the feet, especially because of his kicking game. Now, if Feely is going to go after him with the wrestling, I don't think it's going to be extremely effective, because Rodriguez spent so much time training in Chicago with top wrestlers and Izzy Martinez and those guys. So he's ready for that. The problem with Rodriguez always has been his conditioning. He basically has two rounds of cardio. So now, if this is a competitive fight after two rounds, then I would definitely put my live betting money on Andre Feely to pick up a decision. But for the most part, Yair Rodriguez just has a tendency to throw all these crazy attacks at his opponents, whether it's aggressive submissions, high-risk things like flying triangles, just you name it. The guy will try it if he's put in a position. If Feely gets a takedown, Rodriguez is going to be all over him with submission attempts, might make him panic. And then on the feet, Rodriguez is going to be throwing the most craziest spinning kicks that you've ever seen at him from distance. And you name it, Rodriguez is going to throw it, because he has a lot of confidence in his ability to recover from those high-risk attacks. Now, they're not particularly effective in terms of finishing fights, but they definitely put some points on the scoreboard in the eyes of the judges. So what I see happening here is Rodriguez comes out aggressive, does his thing with his flashy attacks. Feely will survive him, but I don't think that he's going to win any of the first two rounds, and then Feely will probably come on strong late. But I see Rodriguez picking up a decision after winning the first two rounds. But maybe Feely is good enough to break character here and change the way things work, at least in terms of Yair Rodriguez fights. But my pick at this point is going to be the favorite, Yair Rodriguez. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Robert Whittaker, who is 16-4, taking on Rafael Natal, who is 21-6-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Whittaker -350, the comeback in Natal +250. Right now it is Whittaker -330, the comeback in Natal +270. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there has been two-way action on this fight as well. Actually, recently, there has been action coming in a little bit more on Natal. The line was a little bit higher a couple days ago, and now we're seeing some dog action coming in on Natal. And a lot of it's, from what's been reported, is not square action either. So there has been some decent sharp action coming in Natal's way, taking that dog price. I kind of disagree with that in a way. I mean, I understand Natal is an underrated fighter. I mean, I've made money betting him myself. He's a very well-put-together fighter, meaning He's got good stand-up. He could have effective power on the feet. I mean, he's more than capable of landing enough shots or landing those accurate blows to knock people out. I mean, he doesn't really do that typically. He's more of a grinder in your face, take you down, kind of control you that way. He's got submission game to go along with you. So he can finish fights, obviously. I mean, he's finished 12, I believe, of his 21 wins. But that being said, he's more of a kind of a decision type of guy. And he's faced good competition throughout. The problem with Natal has been that chin. His cardio has always seemed to let him down a little bit as the fight goes. He slows down. And if you are betting on Natal, I mean, like I said, I've been in that position before too. By round three, a lot of times you're sweating and thinking, man, just survive, just survive. And I think that's always a concern with Natal fights. But he has addressed a little bit more. He's definitely been putting in the work. I think he's the best he's ever been in his career right now. And I think that against Whitaker, if Whitaker doesn't get him out of there early, it's going to be an interesting fight because Natal does present a lot of problems to most fighters, especially at middleweight. So Whitaker, of course, we all know that he's moved up from welterweight. He won the Ultimate Fighter at middleweight, and then, he dropped down. Now he's making his reappearance at middleweight, and he's looked great thus far. I mean, his performance over Uriah Hall, wow. I mean, that was really a thing of beauty. So Whitaker has that kind of capability in him. He's got that kind of crazy knockout power at 185 still, even though he's moving up to 185, or he's just been at 185 for a couple fights again. Man, the guy is still one of the hardest hitters in the weight class. So he's not really outsized. He's not really outskilled either. I mean, he's got the takedown defense to keep the fight upright in most cases. And then he obviously can outstrike his opponent. So Whitaker is a machine on the feet. He's got tons of knockout power, and he's going against a guy that when he loses, he gets knocked out. So to me, it's not a great formula for Natal. I think if he can't get Whitaker against the cage and kind of make it a boring fight, can't get Whitaker on the ground, he's going to probably end up getting knocked out because Whitaker just hits way too hard for that chin to take. That's my take on it. Now, at the price, it's a little scary to lay that kind of juice against a talented fighter like Natal because it can burn you for sure. But at the same time, I mean, I know there's some dog action coming in, like I said, on Natal. I don't know if I would actually go that way either. So it's a tough fight to bet where the line is right now. I think for those of you guys that are looking to bet this fight, kind of see what happens on fight day. The limits are going to open up. There's going to be some heavy action coming in one way or the other, and then kind of take a stab at either guy if you like. But for right now, it is definitely a tough fight, but I do think Whitaker probably comes away with a victory here over Natal, and I think it is by knockout. That's what I expect to happen, and I think it's probably going to happen.
The big difference here between these guys is power. I mean, Rafael Natal is probably as good of a striker overall, technically, as Robert Whitaker, but he definitely does not wing it as hard. And Whitaker has been going out there and taking care of business against some good fighters. I mean, he's not beating a bunch of jokers, especially the last one, Uriah Hall. He made Uriah Hall tentative. That is shocking to me. Just got in his face, landed some big shots, had Uriah Hall panicking a little bit in there. So if he can get in Natal's face and do that, then he's either going to force Natal to change the dynamic of the fight, maybe with some more takedown attempts or clinches, or he's just going to put Natal away with a big shot. I mean, Natal has definitely been knocked out before a couple times. We've seen it. Andrew Craig in a fight that he was winning and then just got head kicked out of nowhere. And then Tim Kennedy, which I think this fight is going to mirror a little bit, who just put pressure on Natal and then eventually just put him away with a big shot. I think that's what's going to happen here. Robert Whitaker is just going to move forward aggressively, has a lot of confidence in himself, especially in the middleweight division, maybe especially in his chin now that he doesn't have to cut as much weight. And he's been just going after his opponents, and it's working. I mean, his power has translated to middleweight, and maybe some of the chin issues that he suffered at welterweight are not happening now. Now, Natal, he's had chin issues at middleweight throughout his career, and he's still at middleweight. So he really hasn't exactly changed any of that situation. Now, in terms of overall game, Natal does have the better ground game. He has the better jiu-jitsu. So if he's able to put Whitaker on his back and get Whitaker out of his biggest strength, then Natal could win this fight, definitely. I mean, he does have the ability to do that. He's done it before in a couple fights against some pretty tough opponents, so I could see him pulling that off. But that being said, I mean, Robert Whitaker, you know, he throws heat, and there are going to be multiple opportunities this fight for Whitaker to go out there and try to find a home on Natal's chin. And I think at some point in this fight, Whitaker does connect and Whitaker does put him out. And even if he doesn't, I don't see Natal taking Whitaker down repeatedly. I think Whitaker just gets in his face and either pressures him with a dominant decision on the feet or puts him out. So I'm going to side with Robert Whitaker. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have former champion Anthony Pettis, who is 18-4, taking on Edson Barboza, who is 16-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Pettis, minus 180, the comeback on Barboza, plus 140. And right now, looking over at five times, it's minus 185 for Pettis. Barboza's plus 160. There has been two-way action on this fight. It's been out for a little while, so there's been some back and forth betting going on here. I mean, you have two of the best strikers at 155. I mean, in the history of the sport, regardless of what era, you're going to always remember that Pettis and Barboza were amongst the best of all time. I mean, striking-wise, two amazing guys to watch. I mean, they can, with their accuracy, with their power, with the way they mix things up, it's a thing of beauty, really, for both guys. So really looking forward to this fight. It's an interesting fight because usually their opponents would like to take them down, control them a little bit because they don't want to strike with them. So this is going to be a battle. You know, Barboza doesn't really look for takedowns that often. He's probably not going to shoot on Pettis and try to get him to the ground. That's kind of what Pettis wants, obviously, as well. So he could try to test that chin of Barboza, which has been rocked. He has been knocked out in the past before, too. Pettis does have the better chin of the two guys right now. That's for sure. At least at, to this point, he does. He's shown a pretty tough chin. So this is tough because, I mean, if it hits the scorecards, it really depends on what the judges like to see. It's kind of one of those fights because these guys are going to be picking each other off left and right. They're going to be landing on each other. They're, again, probably not going to be going for many takedowns along the way. So I'm sure one of these guys eventually gets caught. And if that's the case before three rounds is up, I have to favor Pettis. I think that he does have the better chin. And in a firefight, I trust him a little bit more than I trust Barboza. So awesome fight. I mean, there's nothing really much more to say about this fight. These guys match up really well. Two of the best strikers, like I said at the beginning, in the history of the lightweight division. And we're going to see him do battle. So great matchmaking, great fight for the fans. And I'm really curious to see how this thing plays out. But I do give the slight edge to Pettis overall. And I think he is probably going to come away with the win here against Barboza.
The biggest difference between these guys is chin strength. I mean, Anthony Pettis, he has not looked great in his last couple fights against Eddie Alvarez and Rafael dos Anjos. And he got pressured in those fights, and he took some big shots and a lot of punishment in the dos Anjos fight where he lost his title. But he still weathered the storm and hung in there and took his beating. And I think that's the difference, is when both of these guys take punishment, Pettis was able to weather it and handle it and just keep fighting, and Edson Barboza crumples. Time and time again, we've seen Barboza look like an absolute world beater when he's in control on the feet. I mean, he was looking great against Tony Ferguson in that first round, and then the second Ferguson caught him with anything, he just wilted and then ended up losing the fight. You saw it in the Donald Cerrone fight. I mean, it was quick. Just came out there, looked aggressive, was winging kicks, and then boom, caught with the jab, rear naked choke. Jamie Varner, same thing. All the confidence in the world, clipped with the right hand, put out. I mean, the guy just cannot take a good shot. And that is the biggest difference. I mean, because if he could, Barboza could potentially have been champion by now. But he just can't. Every time that he kind of gets up to that top level, something happens that prevents him from getting there, and it's been his chin time and time again. So neither of these fighters really handle pressure very well, especially Pettis. I mean, he lets his opponents back him into the fence. He isn't the most aggressive in terms of fending off takedowns. So I'm really concerned about and interested in what's going to happen here, because is one of the two going to be the more pressure fighter? Because a lot of times they like to be more of a counter fighter or picking their spots. And if that happens, then this could be a very even match. And Barboza definitely is extremely dangerous from a little bit further distance than Pettis, because he's got an inch in, a couple inches in reach, maybe an inch or two in leg reach. So Barboza's kicks could actually connect from a little bit further away without putting himself quite in as much danger as Pettis's. And in terms of a punching power, Pettis has decent punching power, but Barboza definitely has fight-ending punching power. Now, I'm not sure it would be fight ending against Pettis because he is so tough, but it still is a possibility. And now ground game, that's the biggest, another big difference. Pettis definitely does have a much more dangerous Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu game. Barboza is not particularly great in terms of wrestling or in terms of submissions. So if Pettis gets himself in a position to utilize submissions, he will definitely have a big edge there. Barboza is more defensive in that department. He wants to just avoid takedowns. He has pretty good takedown defense, a good sprawl. So Pettis would have to be a bit sneaky in terms of how he would make his entrances into that department. So I think this fight is going to be competitive, especially if neither guy presses the action. But I'm going to side with Anthony Pettis mainly due to chin strength. But he is a fighter that is kind of lost right now and needs to kind of find out what's wrong and correct it and get a good quality win to get back in contention. So my pick is going to be Anthony Pettis, but this fight will be close. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a flyweight title fight as defending champion Demetrius Johnson, who is 22-2-1, takes on undefeated Olympic gold medalist Henry Cejudo, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds banker's perspective on this one?
I open Johnson -405, the comeback on Cejudo +285. Right now over at Five Dimes, it's Johnson -440, the comeback on Cejudo is +350. Line has increased a little bit. But it is 4-1. It looks like market price out there across the Don Best screen right now. There is a lot of 4-1s out there. In fact, a bookmaker you get under, it's like 395 right now. So about 4-1, between 4 and 4.5 to 1 is the market price out there right now. And I think it's fair. In fact, it might be a little bit low. And that's crazy. I know. I mean, considering Cejudo, with all the respect the guy gets and the capabilities and the background he comes from, obviously we all know he's an Olympic champion. That says a lot right there. I mean, that says how many people are capable of accomplishing something like that. So he's definitely a special type of athlete. And right now in the sport of MMA, even before he got into UFC, the guy has definitely been working on his boxing, and it shows. I mean, the guy has really strong boxing skills. He's got power. He's got speed. He's got good technique. In fact, I think at times in the cage or in the octagon inside the UFC, his striking has looked better than his wrestling because he hasn't really utilized that wrestling that much in, as far as dominating fights in the UFC. So to me, he's not going to have the wrestling advantage over Johnson in this spot because Mighty Mouse, we all know, is one of the best wrestlers at flyweight or in the UFC period, technically speaking. He's definitely a great wrestler, great technique. And then across the board, as far as how he matches up with Cejudo, Johnson is going to have the technical skill set and is the better striker. Johnson has the better submission game. And again, the wrestling should neutralize each other out. I mean, you could, if this was a pure wrestling match, of course you would lean with Cejudo, but this isn't a pure wrestling match. This is an MMA fight. And in the cage thus far, Johnson's wrestling has been more impressive to me. So I think every sign across the board favors Johnson. Not to mention, I mean, if you look at some of the opponents Johnson's beat, I know a lot of people are probably going to say, well, who's in the flyweight division? They're always looking for contenders for Johnson. It's because he smoked everybody. I mean, everybody he's faced, he stepped up and always has looked amazing doing so. In fact, in my opinion, Mighty Mouse is severely underrated. And that's why I think he's going to beat Cejudo, because I really don't see an advantage anywhere for Cejudo unless he can land that one punch knockout and get Johnson rocked and then just finish him off in that regard. I mean, we have seen Johnson's chin get checked before. He's been wobbled. He's been dropped a little bit, but his recovery is great and he hasn't gotten beat that way. So I'm not sure if Cejudo's the man to do it. And if he's not the man to knock him out, then he's not going to probably win on the scorecards unless we see bad judging here. I just think Mighty Mouse is going to be too much for him. So in my opinion, 4-1 or not 4-1, I mean, this line could be a little bit higher. You got to give Cejudo respect, but I still believe that it's a good spot for Johnson to win this fight. So I am going to pick Johnson to win, and I'm fairly confident. I mean, unless Cejudo just has been working his rear off and has gotten so much better since his last fight, I just think it's going to be a bad night for him. And all the hype around him and that shot at getting the title and all the stuff, a lot of people were expecting him to be a future champ. I think it comes to an end right now because I think Johnson comes away with the win at 197.
Henry Cejudo could potentially be the biggest challenge to Demetrius Johnson, but I'm not quite buying it. He has not shown so far in his UFC career that he is an elite flyweight. I mean, he might be top five, but I don't think he's better than Horiguchi. I don't think he's better than Benavidez, and I don't think he's better than Dodson. And Johnson beat Dodson so bad the last time that Dodson left the whole division and moved up to bantamweight. So Johnson is in a really good position here to not just look good, but put on the type of performance that opens people's eyes. Now, Cejudo is great. He is a good fighter. I mean, the guy won a gold medal in the Olympics, for crying out loud. But he has not shown elite-level wrestling so far, at least in terms of MMA, in the octagon. And I think if they're trading wrestling for wrestling, Demetrius Johnson's going to hold his own with him in the wrestling department. He times his takedowns better than any fighter I've ever seen, except maybe Dominic Cruz. I mean, he has a just an elite brain and fight IQ. Like, he is just capable of making those split-second decisions so well. He sees things coming. Cejudo just isn't quite on that level. He's not well-rounded as Johnson. I mean, he's more of that wrestler that has a decent boxing background that's going to go out there and try to box standing and then maybe take you down. He's not a great top control guy. He doesn't do a lot of damage from top position. He's not threatening with submissions. And that's just an area that Johnson is going to have him smoked in. Johnson from distance should have a big advantage. I see him getting in and out and just picking Cejudo apart on the feet while Cejudo tries to wing some shots. And I don't think they're going to hit because Johnson's entrances and exits are so smooth and his footwork is so good. And if that's not working, Johnson can take him into the clinch. And he is a killer in the clinch. He has ferocious elbows, great knees. He does serious damage with his dirty boxing. He really has taken that part of his game to the next level. And then on the ground, Johnson has been able to pick up multiple submissions so far in his title reign. He has great arm bars. I think he can really hop on some chokes if need be. He's just all over his opponents all the time. Like, it's almost a suffocating when you're fighting him. So I just don't see where Henry Cejudo is going to come in here, no matter how great a shape he's in, no matter how good of an athlete he is. I don't see where he's going to come in here and have an advantage against Demetrius Johnson. I honestly would not be shocked whatsoever if Johnson ends up picking up multiple more takedowns than Cejudo does in this fight. He might even shut Cejudo out in terms of takedowns. Now, Cejudo has shown a little bit of pop in his hands, but even there, he doesn't have just massive one-punch knockout power. I think he's scored maybe one knockdown in his UFC run so far, and I don't think that is enough power to hurt or put away Demetrius Johnson. I mean, the one time Johnson's really been hurt in a fight was against John Dodson, and that guy hits like a Mack truck in the flyweight division, and even he couldn't put Johnson out. He just hurt him. So I don't think Henry Cejudo can do that. I don't think he can put Johnson in that perilous type of position. I think we're going to see another momentous performance from perhaps the best pound-for-pound fighter on the UFC roster, except maybe the guy fighting in the main event. But I think Demetrius Johnson wins and wins convincingly in his title defense. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a UFC interim light heavyweight title fight between former champion John Jones as he makes his return. He is 21-1, taking on Ovince St. Preux, who is 19-7. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Jones, -675, the comeback on OSP, +450. Right now, looking over five dimes, there has been some crazy action on this fight, but right now it's Jones -650. The comeback on OSP is +475. Now, I'm saying there's been some crazy action because originally when I put this line up, everybody's going nuts thinking, man, this thing should be like 2,000, 2,500. There's no shot that OSP has. And the line climbed up to like a -800 shortly after. Then all of a sudden, sportsbooks started getting drilled with dog action. And it wasn't just one person, two people, groups or whatever. I mean, there was a lot of individuals from what I've heard that started betting OSP. And the price dropped to like -450-ish, -500, under 500 for sure at one spot. Which is a little bit surprising. So there has been a lot of backers out there. Now, it was almost like somebody reported or somebody caught wind of some kind of injury. It was just surprising with the amount of dog action and the different amounts of people that, you know, were coming in on the dog. But at the same time, there has been action back now on Jones. A lot of people are parlaying. A lot of people took advantage of that low price and hopped in on Jones. So this is weird as far as line movement goes, because there's a lot of split opinions out there already, believe it or not, with the majority of the people obviously thinking the line is insanely low for Jones. So it doesn't make all that much sense. But at the same time, I mean, it is what it is. The sportsbooks are actually at a pretty good spot as far as the booking end of things for them. So it's not a bad thing. And you probably want to be in a spot like that, because there's a lot of interesting situations or interesting circumstances that take place in this fight. Jones has been out, as we all know, for a long time now. He got his title stripped. He had his problems with his addictions. He said he's been clean for 7 months now. That's great. I do compliment him for that. I mean, it's definitely a challenge in his life that he had to overcome, and especially being the athlete and the champion that he once was. So hopefully that is the case and he's cleaned up his act and we could see an even better John Jones stepping into the cage and moving forward from now on. But there's still so much stuff surrounding him in his personal life that some of it has to be distraction. Now, as far as physical, I mean, tools and physical, the way he looks attribute wise, man, I mean, the guy looks even better than he did. He's definitely put some time in. He's showing the picture. He's kind of bragging, of course, on social media that, he's more ripped than he ever been. He's stronger than he's ever been. And it does show. I mean, he looks great from what we've seen, but he's been out of the cage for a while now. OSP has picked up a lot of momentum since the time John Jones has been off a little bit as well. He's getting more confidence. I know he suffered the loss to Teixeira, which was unfortunate for him. And he even got out wrestled by Bader along the way on his run to this title shot here and getting ranked close to the top five. I believe officially OSP in the UFC rankings might be ranked like six or so. So he's made quite an impact in the light heavyweight division in the last year or so. OSP has, he's climbed up the ranks pretty good, and he does have the athleticism and the skill set to give a lot of guys problems. I mean, his performances as of late overall, like I said, minus you take out the Teixeira fight, which is something you definitely have to taking consideration for this fight, or you take out the Bader fight. I mean, outside of that, he's shown his power. He's been able to finish fights. He's looked pretty good. Now, he is sloppy, wild with his aggression at times. So John Jones is definitely the more technical fighter. OSP usually enjoys a reach advantage over most of his opponents, and he's not going to have that against John Jones either. So Jones really has an edge everywhere this fight takes place. He's the better striker. He's the more technical striker. Jones is the better wrestler. He's a better ground fighter. I mean, across the board, all signs are pointing to John Jones winning this fight. That's why everybody's going so crazy thinking, man, this is easy money for John Jones. And it very well might be. I mean, when it plays out, Jones has that kind of skill set that he can make it a short night for OSP. With all the question marks, though, and his time off and all that stuff, I think the line's right now where it is, 650-ish is a fair spot, because to me, it would keep me from going crazy and betting John Jones, because OSP has enough power that he lands one solid shot and follows up. Man, that's it. He could put anybody out at 205, so including John Jones, even though Jones has shown a great chin. That's another good attribute for Jones. I mean, he's been tested, and that chin's come through just fine. So a lot of good things to like about Jones. That's why he's well respected. A lot of people consider him the best fighter in the sport, pound for pound, and they're glad he's back. So I am as well. I'm expecting a pretty good fight. We should see a finish in this fight, and the finish probably comes from John Jones stopping OSP. That's how I think it's going to play out. So it's really a no-brainer here on who to pick. I mean, you got to go with John Jones here. But as far as betting window goes, just be careful out there who you're betting. Because if you are taking a stab at OSP, you could be throwing your money away, I think. And if you are taking a stab at John Jones, just be careful, because that money is a little bit risky for sure. At least I want to see – I'd rather see John Jones come back and perform well and then see how you bet him moving forward. I think this is a spot where you kind of just got to stay back, sit back, and watch how the fight unfolds, in my opinion at least. But that being said, it should be a pretty good fight, interesting fight, and I am going to pick John Jones to win.
The only question mark in this fight for me is what John Jones is going to look like. I mean, we've seen him doing insane workout videos. Looks like he's packed on a lot of muscle. Look like he's been really working on his punching power. And he's been out of the cage for so long. And there's going to be potentially some ring rust in there. That being said, I don't see any way Ovince St. Preux wins this fight. As Nick mentioned, really, what he has is that early first round knockout power. And I don't think he can put out John Jones. I mean, we haven't even seen John Jones hurt in a fight, really. We've seen him bloodied a little bit by Gustafson. We've seen him swollen a little bit in a fight like that. But I mean, the guy just has a granite chin, and he is so incredibly talented. He can take you into your own game and beat you there. Like, he is able to beat any fighter any way he wants. Like, that's how good this guy really is. And You just look at, I know MMA math is silly at times, but just look at the Glover Teixeira. I mean, that's a guy that Ovince St. Preux, some people thought maybe he could beat him. And Glover was able to get out of the first round and then just took Ovince St. Preux down, dominated him, got a submission. John Jones destroyed Glover Teixeira. That fight was not even close. And it was in a striking battle for the most part. And that's, you know, where Glover was supposedly the strongest. So I'm not sure how Ovince St. Preux is going to be able to deal with John Jones. I mean, John Jones has the longest reach in the UFC. So that takes away one of the biggest advantages that St. Preux has had in his career. And so I see John Jones picking Ovince St. Preux apart with jabs from distance, with kicks to the obliques from distance. John Jones has time and time again faced southpaws and not just beat them, but destroyed them with Vitor, with Chael, with Lyoto Machida. So that's another advantage that OSP has in the division that is completely nullified. John Jones has no problem facing southpaws. John Jones has a granite chin, so I think that takes away some of OSP's power advantage. Maybe that's the one thing OSP has, is he hits a little bit harder on the feet. But and then if you factor in conditioning, Ovince St. Preux does slow down in fights. I mean, after the first round, he is not nearly the threat to finish a fight as he is early in a fight. And in terms of submissions, while Ovince St. Preux does have some sneaky, like, calf slicer stuff that he used to pull off back in his Strikeforce days, he's not nearly the submission threat that John Jones is. I mean, this guy submitted Rampage. He submitted Lyoto Machida. I mean, he can go out there and submit anybody he wants to. And I do think that if he wants to, he can submit Ovince St. Preux. But I think John Jones wants to make a statement. And I think he wants to knock Ovince St. Preux out. And that could be the only thing that could be a factor here, is John Jones's hubris. I mean, maybe he goes out there, gets into a firefight, and eats some huge shots from Ovince St. Preux and gets put out. But I don't think it happens. I think he is too talented to let that happen. I think he just completely smashes Ovince St. Preux and either wins one of the most lopsided decisions ever, but that's extremely unlikely because I just don't think Ovince St. Preux's conditioning is going to hold up over that amount of time. And I think John Jones gets a finish probably by the third round at the latest. So my pick is definitely going to be John Jones. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 197. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. Now, if we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.